Good morning, everybody. I can't count the number of movies and TV shows that portray people having sex without making a long-term commitment to each other. In the movies, most often there are no consequences, no pain, no shame, no regrets, and they all live happily ever after. But real life works out differently. Much differently. Having sex without commitment generally does not lead to happily ever after. I've been a pastor for over 40 years, and I've had numerous occasions when I found myself trying to comfort and bring healing to men who came into my office because they were injured by having sex without commitment. The women, of course, went to Cindy's office. More than once, I've listened to a young man in my office sobbing, crying out over the pain and anguish that resulted from having sex with someone without any commitment. And one guy said, "I never knew it could be possible to feel so much pain from just a few minutes of pleasure." About 20 years ago, we did a series on sexuality as a church. It was a little different than this one. This one's more about re-examining sexual ethics, and that was more about handling sexuality and responding to it. Anyway, as we were going through that series, a young woman sent me this email, intending for, you know, wanting me to share it so that other people could learn, describing her experience of having sex without commitment, and kind of jumping a little bit into the end, in the middle of her story. This is what she said, and I think it's very instructive. She says, "At one point, I did tell him this had to stop, and I started to leave. But he persuaded me to stay, and eventually I caved in to his seduction and my own desire and had sex with him. Afterwards, I was in shock and denial. I knew what we had done was wrong, but I didn't want to experience the shame and pain of confessing my sin. I didn't want to feel guilt and regret. And I went through the entire next day emotionally and spiritually numb, occasionally mumbling a disconnected prayer of, 'I'm sorry, God, I know I shouldn't have done that, I won't do it again.' And I intended to tell the guy that it had been a mistake and that we could not do that again, and although I had no intention of ending the relationship, I thought that we could keep dating but just pull way back physically. When I talked to him the next day, I told him all this, and he said, 'It didn't matter because he didn't want to see me again anyway.' While I reeled in shock, he completely cut off all contact with me. And that's when the pain and horror and reality hit me like a tidal wave. I sat in my room screaming sobs of anguish and guilt and regret. I felt the most soul-shattering sense of abandonment and defilement that I could ever remember feeling. My panicked roommates got one of the Christian girls in the house to come and talk to me. I trusted her and told her what had happened, and rather than condemning or judging me, she was kind and compassionate and told me that God still loved me and that he could forgive me and cleanse me and make me pure again. And in the midst of intense pain, it comforted me to hear that message of God's forgiveness and that he still cared about me in spite of what I had done. Even though my friend's compassion reminded me that my sin was forgiven through my confession and the power of Jesus' blood, I was still so hurt from that one night stand that I cried hours every day for the next several days. And I sunk into a depression that lasted several months. It slowly dawned on me that this guy had probably never been interested in a real relationship with me or cared about me as a person, but had only been trying to get me into bed. This realization sparked deep feelings of worthlessness in my heart and soul, and also filled me with anger. For several months, I battled a nearly uncontrollable rage at this man who had used me and discarded me so callously. If I happened to see him on campus, I would begin to shake all over, and sometimes I'd have to run home and cry. I was also furiously angry at myself for allowing myself to do what I knew to be wrong and for allowing myself to be used like a sex object. I wondered how I could be so stupid. I wasn't sure if my relationship with God could ever be the same again. This is the cost of sex without commitment. Pain, regret, rage, guilt, shame, feeling like a hypocrite, feeling disqualified from leading a full life of freedom in Christ, feeling like a failure. Even though I knew and was reminded again and again of God's forgiveness and love and healing power, it took months for God to work out of me the intense pain and shame and anger that followed after making such a huge mistake, and it took years before I was genuinely able to forgive the guy who had hurt me more deeply than I could remember anyone hurting me in my life. For the last 60 years or more, we as a people have been constantly bombarded with two big lies. The first big lie, which we talked about a few weeks back, is the lie that the way to your best life is to be your own person and follow your own feelings. Be yourself, follow your feelings, trust your feelings, pursue yourself, find yourself within yourself, all of that, which is called expressive individualism. The second big lie is that what you do with your body doesn't really matter. That it has no real connection to your emotional or spiritual life, which is actually a modern version of a very old lie called Gnosticism, which denigrates the body and elevates feelings and knowledge over the body. And the combination of these two lies has led to a third big lie. This third big lie is that it's fine to have sex without commitment as long as both parties are in agreement. This lie is promoted in TVs, movies, popular music, magazines, social media, just about anything you can be exposed to. This has progressed to the point where at the college level, men and women are often encouraged to dispense with any expectations of romance or lasting love or relationship, but to simply engage in expressing their sexuality in a utilitarian and promiscuous fashion. In her book, A Return to Modesty, Wendy Shallot, who is not a Christian but actually from a Jewish background, puts it this way. Hookup is my generation's word for having sex, or sometimes for what used to be called making out. The hookup connotes the most casual of connections. Any emotional attachment deserves scorn and merits what the book Sex on Campus calls a dangerously high ball and chain rating. We've had a generation or more of continual and concerted efforts in this direction to promote these lies from people in authority, educators, in magazines for men and women, on social media, and so on. And often with that is the idea that we need to do away with what they call the puritanical and patriarchal idea that sexual relationships should be reserved for marriage, or even that there should be any kind of morality attached to sexuality at all. Some have taken the position that love and relationship should have little to do with sex, and that a woman who hopes for ongoing love and romance in her social relationships has something wrong with her. And so that's what we see. And if you walk through the grocery store today and you like pick up the magazines, which is generally a questionable activity, you are likely to find articles on how to seduce, how to handle casual sex, or even how to commit adultery. And many little girls and young women are given the message that if they do not have many men, then they must not be very pretty. And Nita even mentioned the messages about sex and women that are in our popular music. So how's this all worked out? What are the costs of these big lies? Of course, what they always say is it doesn't hurt anybody. How can love hurt anybody? But actually, it's not love, and it actually hurts a lot of people. So let's think about this. Number one, because of this approach, this big lie, there's less safety and freedom for everybody. Folks, as recently as the 1960s, which I happen to be old enough to remember, there was a pretty strong idea that women were to be on a pedestal and to be respected, and you opened doors for them and you treated them very well. And you certainly didn't say nasty things to them. As recently as the 1960s, a woman could walk down the street, secure in a reasonable expectation that she would be safe from sexual harassment or attack. But after nearly 50 years of encouraging sex without commitment, that is no longer the case. If you, like me, are a man who has women in your life that you care about, a wife and a daughter, you would understand that you don't want them to go anywhere alone because it's not that safe. And women, of course, are never free from that nagging sense of fear and vulnerability. My father's generation could not even imagine what it's like for us now. Things have changed, and not for the better. 54% of American women report that they've experienced sexual harassment at work. And that's in spite of the fact that it's against the law, and you can get sued and fired and, you know, a whole host of other things. There have been an increasing number of sexual assaults on playgrounds, sometimes by kids no older than 9 years old. Where is that coming from? Every place is less safe, and it's not just less safe for women, it's also less safe for a lot of men. So that's the first cost. The second cost is an increase in addictive behavior and emotional distress. You see, when we give ourselves sexually to another person, we're opening up a deep place in our soul. And without commitment, we're very likely to find that what we get in return for a little bit of pleasure is years of pain and rejection and shame. And those have a way of leading to other kinds of problems. Estimates are that anywhere between 3 and 6% of all adults are now caught in a serious sex addiction. That means they really cannot stop. They're out of control. If you include addiction to pornography, the numbers are much higher. More on that in a few weeks. This addiction not only destroys families, but it also destroys careers, jobs, businesses, and can sabotage every single relationship a person has, often leading to depression and sometimes even suicide. That's a pretty serious cost. Psychologists and other social workers are dealing with an unprecedented number of women with eating disorders or women who feel the need to harm themselves to deal with the pain in their life. One girl reported that the dorm bathrooms rarely worked because the pipes were perpetually clogged with vomit. Though we all desperately need love, we are finding that casual sex does never fit the bill. It fails to meet that need. Folks, when we buy into the big lies, we become distorted. Diminished versions of who we're meant to be. We become less. And we're often deeply trapped into shame and pain from the inevitable rejections that come from sex without commitment. And we've all been lied to again and again, like every day. And some of you sitting here this morning are bearing the wounds and scars of those lies. I want you to know right now that Jesus sees your pain, whether it's recent or long ago, but he sees it and he desires to bring to you healing and comfort. And of course, he has a better way for all of us that would spare us that kind of pain. The third big cost of these lies is our children growing up without both parents. As a result of this acceptance of sex without commitment, more children are being born to single unmarried mothers. Also, as a result, a lot more men leave their partners and abandon their children in search of the next partner that doesn't involve any responsibility. Without commitment, generally, men, in general, will not take the responsibility for children. So as a result, about a third of the children in the United States are growing up in homes without two married parents. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, something almost 20 million children, more than one in four, live without a father in the home. And that's a really big deal, because it's not a fair shake for the kids. As a result of that, these children are more likely, statistically, they can show this, they're more likely to grow up in poverty, they're more likely to have behavioral problems, they're more likely to struggle in school, they're more likely to end up in prison, and this in spite of often heroic efforts on the part of their single parent to try to fill the gap, a gap that cannot be filled. So children are being harmed. Millions of them. And then number four, and we should not overlook this, as a result of sex without commitment, more children are being aborted. More women who are pregnant choose to abort their children. In 2017, so this is new, relatively recent statistic, in 2017, over 800,000 abortions were performed in the U.S., and half of them, they said, half of them were because the mother didn't want to be a single mom. So at least 400,000 abortions in 1 year, a direct consequence of sex without commitment, which is actually an unspeakable tragedy for all of us. How many scientists, musicians, teachers, pastors, and so on have been lost before they got a chance at life? How many of the next Mozart or the next Einstein have we lost because we wanted to pursue our pleasures without any commitment? And it leaves a deep wound in the heart of the mothers, usually carried in secret. They never tell anyone. They never speak of it. They never express it, never grieved, and never healed. What we have is a society filled right now by the devastation caused by the big lies. As people of God, we would bring healing to that devastation, just like the Christian roommate that helped the girl at the beginning. But we must first begin by recognizing that God has a great alternative way for his people to live, by asking that a lifelong commitment come before a sexual relationship. God is actually protecting us. He's protecting us from pain and rejection and shame. He's protecting us from addiction and all that stuff. And he's also, and very particularly, trying to protect women and children. It's like the best thing for women and children ever to insist on marriage before sex. Ephesians 5, beginning of verse 1. Imitate God, since you are the children he loves. Live in love as Christ also loved us. He gave his life for us as an offering and a sacrifice, a soothing aroma to God. Don't let sexual sin, perversion of any kind, or greed, and it's interesting how often the Bible links and real life links greed and sexual immorality, actually. They tend to go, you know, together for some reason. Anyway, or greed even be mentioned among you. This is not appropriate behavior for God's holy people. It's not right that dirty stories, foolish talk, or obscene jokes should be mentioned among you either. Instead, give thanks to God. You know very well that no person who is involved in sexual sin, perversion, or greed, which means worshiping wealth, can have any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Don't let anyone deceive you with meaningless words. It is because of sins like these that God's anger comes to those who refuse to obey him. Don't be partners with them. Once you lived in the dark, But now the Lord has filled you with light. Live as children who have light. So in a time of darkness, we have a choice. We can choose to live as the children of light. But how do we do that? Well, we must live a life of love. First of all, loving God. Second of all, loving our neighbors of both sexes as ourselves. And that means, he says, that there must not be even a hint of sexual sin or any kind of impurity or of greed. Sexual sin would be any sexual relationship outside of marriage. And he says we should not be even close. In fact, he says it should come out in the way we talk as well as how we act. Like God's taking a stand right here against sexual harassment. He's like in the front row of the Me Too movement here. Like, stop the sexual harassment of women. If we give in to these things, we need to understand that in so doing, we are engaging in the deeds of darkness, and there will be consequences. That's very interesting. The passage is like those warnings that come when you go to the store and you buy a saw or some other power tool. They always come with a booklet, a big fat booklet. And the whole front of the booklet is all warnings. And they make a big, long list, as only a good lawyer could make, you know, covering every possible contingency of all the stupid things to do. So, you know, you'll see there, don't cut wood with this chainsaw while your leg is under the wood. Or don't stand in a bathtub of water and plug the radio into the outlet. And so on. In other words, don't be stupid. This good thing can hurt you if you do stupid things with it. Okay? Sometimes the warnings take up more pages than the actual use instructions. It's like 75% warnings. Well, that's what God's doing here. He's saying, look, you got a good thing, sexuality, but you got to use it in the right way. Don't do stupid things, and you're going to end up hurting you because it's powerful. There is a way to live and do it well, and that's what he's calling us to. He's saying, don't do this, because if you do, people are going to get hurt. And that's why God is angry, he says, about sex without commandment. He's angry because people get hurt. You know, some of us get twitchy when we read about God's wrath. God is love, and people he loves are being oppressed and confused and hurt and shamed and abused, and that makes him angry, and it should. Yeah? God's angry when a woman is used for sex and then discarded like she's just a piece of meat. God is angry when we cheat our future marriage partners of the security of knowing that our sexuality can be kept within the bounds of commitment. God is angry when babies are killed and children are abandoned because they were the inconvenient byproducts of our pursuit of selfish pleasure. God is angry when men and women don't know how to enter into the deep, lifelong relationships of love that he intended and that are so desperately needed, because they've been sold a lie that it's not important. And God is angry when women are so confused about how to be a woman, they feel the need to vomit their food in order to feel more pretty. I love God's anger because of why he's angry. Because it speaks of his love. And he's saying, you know what? You can't pursue. I got one under here. Thanks. Somebody beat you to the punch. It's nice that you all try to take care of me. You know, what he's saying is, you can't pursue your own ends for greed or sex without marriage and at the same time be growing in a relationship with God. You can't be trying to be your own God and king and then live in the reality of God as king. No kingdom has two kings, only one. You have to make a choice. By choosing God's way, we choose the path of wholeness and holiness, the path of safety and security, the path that leads us to the best versions of our nature. But that is not quite the end of the story. One of my favorite verses in the Bible is from the book of 1 Corinthians. It's a letter that was written to the people in the city of Corinth. And the city of Corinth, at the time, a couple thousand years ago, was famous for being a city full of sexual license and immorality. It was, as it were, the Las Vegas of its day. But I think Las Vegas was tame by comparison to Corinth. I mean, they had sayings about, well, you know those people from Corinth. It was an anything-goes kind of city. It was all out in the open and really a depraved, broken place. But some of the people living there, people who once had given themselves over to every kind of immorality, some of them came to follow Jesus, and they became a part of the little church that was there. And the apostle wrote them this letter. And he reminded them that even though many of them had done horrible things which God condemned, God had grace and mercy for them. 1 Corinthians 6:11, he said, "That's what some of you were," having listed off a big, old, long, ugly list. "That's what some of you were. But you have been washed and made holy. And you have received God's approval in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and in the Spirit of our God. But you have been washed and made holy." Folks, what's important today is that you know that no matter what your past is, no matter what your regrets are, no matter how you've made God angry, no matter how you've hurt yourself or other people, no matter what you struggle with, God is ready to give you grace and mercy and healing if you will turn to Him. And by the power of Jesus' sacrifice on the cross, you can be washed also. You can be made holy and set free for a new life with God. There is no past. There is no shame. There is no hurt. There is no evil deed of immorality that is too great for God to heal and purify. None. And that's why He sent Jesus into the world. About 35 years ago, I was teaching a healing conference in Minneapolis. It was a Sunday morning, last session. I'd been there all week, couldn't wait to get out of there. I was heading to the airport in just about half an hour. In fact, I think I was grabbing my coat. And this woman came up asking me to pray for her nose. There was something with her nose that made breathing difficult, and she told me, but I can't remember. And this woman, she had the appearance of somebody who'd had a hard life. Like, it very quickly, as we briefly talked, like, she didn't actually know how she should be talking in church, shall we say. You know, she had language that led me to believe she hadn't been in church very many times. She'd had a hard life. Anyway, I prayed, and her nose seemed better. And she thanked me and turned around and started walking away. And then this thought came into my head. Tell that woman that the baby she lost is with me and everything's okay. And I thought, oh no. Mm-mm. I'm not going to do that. What if she has a baby? And she thinks I'm like cursing her baby. What if she never had a baby? You know, and then, you know, a couple other scenarios of like ways in which this could go very wrong. And then I thought, I'm leaving in an hour or so. I don't have any reason to ever come back to Minneapolis ever again. So I just went for it. And I said, wait. And she turned around to look at me. And I said, just one more thing. I had this thought. I thought God wanted to say something to you. And she's looking at me like, okay. And I said, I think God wanted me to tell you that the baby you lost is with him and everything's okay. She looked like she'd been hit by a truck. I mean, she went from what's your deal to sobbing so hard she couldn't get any sound out of her mouth. She was just completely undone. After a little while, still sobbing, she started saying, I never knew there was so much love. I never knew there was so much power. After about 10 or 15 minutes, she was able to finally explain that some years previous, she had had an abortion. And she said, every single day since then, I have been in torment over that lost child. And in that moment, God just took his finger and put it on her deepest, darkest, most secret place of torment and regret and said, I heal it. It's covered by the grace and mercy of God. And folks, that grace and mercy is in this room today. It doesn't matter how or when you've been hurt or how or when you hurt others. It doesn't matter what it is that you regret. It doesn't matter what it is that you've never told anybody. I want you to know the grace and mercy of God is here for you. And it is enough. It is enough. So why not open your heart and let the healing begin right now?